Just I would like to make a brief review or just to tell you what happened here before this session. And it was that I organized a series of meetings from October to November. It was 7 meetings where we discussed some aspects of your texts, particularly the Beyond Being series of the articles, and or Beyond Mind and the trilogy, together with some discussion. And yeah, and during these meetings there emerged some questions. I must admit that most of the questions came from me personally. So these are the ones that I sent you till Friday. Unfortunately, some of the people that asked the questions, like the one about chronologization, like which time the Kali Yuga and the eras should start or stop or so, like, he's not online at this moment, but he will be glad to have the answers afterwards. So,
well, to some of the questions I don't have precise answers, but we can try to begin to reply, maybe by order according to the question you sent. So whenever you want, we can begin.
Yes. Okay, so I will just use the questions as I send them in the order, and perhaps after that we can continue on things that you feel are important, or me or others.
Okay.
The first question I sent you in the beginning of the week previous was about the current phase of the Age of Darkness or Kali Yuga, because one of the members of our group, it was the very first meeting, was asking what is the source of the different ways of, how to say, detecting in which period, or if we are at the beginning or at the end of these cycles, because the various sources differ quite a lot.
Yes. My reply for this question will be very general, for different reasons. One of them is that I don't have precise sources here, because I didn't bring my library with me, as is logical.
Yeah.
And also the internet access is not very good, so it's not very easy to contact sources to the internet. But in general, I think one of the main sources of these differences may be that the original interpretation was previous to the Indo-European invasions, and they had nothing to do with the Kasteist interpretation, and that means interpretation in terms of the castes that were established by the Indo-Europeans in India. And also seem to have been, I mean, I believe, because it's very difficult to tell in these scenes, that they were the original ones that should have been more precise. Then, with the interpretation, things began to change, because, first of all, it began to be said that in the original age, the Age of Perfection or Age of Truth, the Brahmin caste prevailed, whereas in the original interpretation, which is the same also with the Stoics and the Cynics in Greece, that was exactly the period where there were no social divisions and things like that, or divisions of wealth and divisions of political power. So together with that change, in which the original age, the brand can prevail, and the second one, the Kshatriya caste, and then in the third one, the Vaishya caste, and then in the Kali Yuga, the Shudra caste, and then towards the end of the Kali Yuga, the outcasts, I mean the Dalits, prevail. And together with that, there might have arisen a need to somehow push away the time, I mean the time of the final conflagration, so to say, or of the end of the cycle, maybe for reasons that have to do with keeping things as they are, because this somehow implies a big need for changing things. And probably, I mean, I am just speculating, but probably those are the main reasons why there are these inconsistencies. But it is clear to me that here is written that there is a perspective according to which mankind urgently needs this change of direction, or otherwise it will face its self-destruction within this very century, which is constantly appearing in the last decades, the silent spring, the limit to growth, and the club of Rome, and number of newer data supporting this claim. Could some excursion of the calculations of the different authors be made? That was the question there.
Yeah.
And then there was a reference to this Mayan and Platonic year prediction. Well,
yes.
I have absolutely no way to judge the Mayan predictions or the Platonic year predictions or anything like that, because I mean, on what basis would I judge something like that, yeah? But it's certain, I mean, maybe if I were the Buddha with omniscience and so on, then I could say this and that, yeah? But as sentient beings, we cannot make an opinion which would be just absolutely unbased, baseless, I mean. But I think that we have, I mean, we have to take it this way, that is something that we are really near the end of the period. Firstly, because of what the question itself says, and secondly, because you see that, for example, it said that at that time the Dzogchen teaching would spread throughout the world, and this is happening right now. And I mean, that is in the predictions of the Dzogchen teaching with regard to this age. And so I think as Dzogchen practitioners, we should give more importance to those predictions than to whatever other interpretation there might have arisen from other traditions. And actually, there is this big coincidence where either we become extinguished or there is a mass consciousness change, and the Dzogchen teachings have this prediction about the spread of these teachings in this time. There is a man in England, I just received an email recently from him, where he says that we are on the verge of this, I mean, he takes this Maya calendar seriously, and he interprets this as we are in the process of a big transition, and that people should be already feeling some inner signs of a change that is beginning to happen on the consciousness of the whole of mankind, yeah? But that is his speculation. I have no idea of whether there could be any basis for that. So, you have any more questions? The group has any more questions about that?
Well, Yeah, thank you for these answers. I'm not sure if Milan or Jitka have questions about that anymore.
Leave them a little while to see whether they have something to ask.
No, thanks. Quite enough for me.
Okay, there seem to be no more questions, huh?
Yeah.
Okay,
Okay.
so we can go to the second question.
Yeah. So,
Do you read it or do I read it?
yeah, I will read it and yeah. So the
Okay.
question was that there is the historical the conclusion that various traditions, including the Indian traditions, the Zurvanism, Zoroastrianism, and so on, originate from the Mount Kailash, and I felt that it is not yet a widespread view on the history. Even Professor Tucci in Italy originally didn't have that idea, and if I remember correctly, it was Chögyal Namgyal Norbu who revised the history in this manner. So I was wondering what are the sources, either the books from Chögyal Namgyal Norbu or from other scholars or historians that promote that conclusion that the historical traditions originate from the ancient Bön teachings from Serap Mivocse or yeah or perhaps like that, and that is the source from of the Indian tradition and also of the traditions that went to the West.
Okay. Different sources. For example, Rinpoche, he has written at least four books on that subject, of which the most recent is The Light of Kailash. They don't really get into the, they don't really probe each of the different traditions. And the only direct explanation that I have from Chögyal Namgyal Norbu on this is the relationship between Shaivism and the teachings of Sherrab Mivocce. For example, in a series of teachings that Rinpoche gave in Caracas in the 90s, I think it was in the very early 90s, Rinpoche asked me to write the book with those teachings, but that's a very long story that we should not get distracted with. So I mean, he was really being very precise because it was for a book. And then he told this idea that Professor Tucci had, that Dzogchen had come from Shaivism. And then Rinpoche said that he was like very ironic towards Tucci, saying that people have a very naive mentality because they think that if something comes from India, then it's something very important because it's a very ancient civilization and everyone acknowledges it to be so. And if it comes from China, the same. But if it comes from Tibet, then whatever is in Tibet should have a source outside Tibet because Tibetan culture is not worth anything. That is the idea of these people who thought that all that was good in Tibet have come from India. That was the widespread interpretation among Tibetan lamas throughout the last millennium, probably, I mean, or at least for many centuries. And Rinpoche went into an analysis of different Tibetan terms that were present in Shaivism, and he concluded that they were actually Tibetan, I mean, Tibeto-Birmanian. They have a Tibetan or Tibeto-Birmanian etymology, and they had absolutely nothing to do with Sanskrit. Therefore, those terms should have come from the tradition of Sobchen, of Shilrabni Wodje, because that's where the oldest reference to Sobchen teaching we have in this last period are those teachings, yeah? And what Professor Tucci said was something different. What Professor Tucci said was that he said that in the religions of Tibet, the famous book, then he says, for example, that the Surbanist used to go on pilgrimage to Mount Kailash all the time. They hold it to be a very holy place, and Rinpoche never talk about that. So it was myself who made a relationship, and if the Surbanists used to go to Mount Kailash all the time, and they hold it as their most sacred place, and moreover, if Surban was a hermaphrodite deity, like Shiva Ardhanarishwara, the Lord who is male and female at the same time, and also is infinite time, like Shiva Mahakala, which we could translate as total time, then it seems that probably Surbanism should have had also its source in the same teachings where Shaivism had its source. Then there are these writings by Alain Danielou, this famous book called Shiva and Dionysos, in which he asserts Dionysos to be Shiva. And actually, in Greek universities, they teach nowadays that Alexander went to the east seeking the origins of Dionysos the Dark, where it's common knowledge somehow that he was looking was for the origins of Dionysos as Shiva in India. And if Shiva came from Mount Kailash, then we could infer that also that Dionysian tradition might have come from that, but that's just hypothetical. Also, this same man says that also the cult of Osiris in Egypt came from that. And of course, there are a lot of evidence suggesting all of this, but from that to go on and prove it, that's a wholly different matter. I myself have done some research. The idea came out from Rinpoche in that very big series of teaching when he spoke about Shaivism. He used this image of the snake that changed the skin as an image that was common in the Sobchen teaching. And that same image, it's the image for the attainment of the holy immortal in Taoism. Then I began to do research into that, and I wrote the paper. The problem is that this paper is only in Spanish. Anyhow, there is a lot of evidence suggesting that Taoism could have had its source in Mount Kailash. If you heard the, I don't remember whether it was in the last retreat here in El Callao, or whether it was in the previous one on Long Day, but in one of those two retreats, Rinpoche was saying that it wasn't there, it was in his commentaries to the movie on Church that was filmed in Italy, that was projected here, and he was saying that nearly exactly the same kind of shamanistic rituals that they had in Tibet, in Bumpus, the Taoists have in China, or that the tribal interpretation of Taoist, which is also shamanic. And the problem, as I said, is that that book is in that paper is in Spanish, and there is another paper where I also, because Professor Tucci also said that the Ismailians also used to go to Mount Kailash in pilgrimage. So from that one could infer that also this tradition came from ancient Dun, particularly from the teachings of Shakyamuni Rinpoche. And if that were the case, then many of the teachings of Sufism would have also come from that, for two reasons. First of all, because many teachings of teachers of Sufism came from Ismailism. For example, Al-Halash, he was an Ismailian, actually he was a Karmatian. That means he was, well, a little complicated to explain that, but he seemed to have brought Ismailian teachings into Sufism. Also Rumi, he was the disciple of Shamsi Tabriz, and Shamsi Tabriz was the disciple, I mean, the grandson of a lieutenant of Hassan ibn al-Sabah, who was the head of the Ismailians, and that was the source of Rumi's teaching, even though in his poetry he had his source in a previous poet, Sufi poet. However, the teaching he received for his own practice came from this man who came from the Ismailian tradition. And there are also a lot of works by this is Vingtième siècle éditeur, this French printing outlet or publisher. They have this research also, where they say they explain how from Ismailian tradition the whole imagery of light came into Sufism, and that imagery of light has been explained by Tucci himself to be in common with that of the ancient Gun. So also that would be like some reference somehow, giving strength to those hypotheses. So I gather all that research and every other research from the origins of the Tantric Indian tradition in another paper, which is also all in Spanish and was published in the same journal where I published the one on Taoism. The one on Taoism is in number 7, and the one on the Indian and Sufi and Ismailian traditions is in number 11 of that journal, which is called Humania del Sur in Spanish. So that is the reference I have to give. I imagine that the work by Rinpoche on that subject you already know, so probably there is no need to give those sources. They are also in my book, so if you have read those books, you have them there. So is there any question in this regard, or are we done?
Yeah, for me it is okay. There is a lot of names and relations, so yeah, it needs to be read in the paper. But I had just a question whether the texts of Professor Putucci are in English published as well, or only in Spanish or Italian.
No, the book by Professor Tucci is in English. You can get it. I have it from a land publisher in India, but I think that in the West it was published by Routledge and Kegan Paul in England.
Uh-huh.
I am not 100% sure, but Actually, the original work was not written in Italian, but in German. It's called Religionen des Tibet und der Mongolei. But the part by Professor Tucci, which is the part of Tibet, was published in English separately from the other part, which is by some Professor Heinze.
Okay, very well. Do you have a question about these relations and spreading of the traditions, Milan or Jirka?
Beyond what?
No, thanks, it's all right. I understand everything.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't hear properly what you said.
I said that it's all right. Okay. I don't have any other questions.
And the other people?
For Jitka, she said she does not have particularly much in-depth knowledge of that, so she just wanted primarily to listen from this perspective.
Okay.
So, very well. I think we can move to the third question, which was, if it is okay, which was related to the transpersonal psychology and the distinction between the samsaric states, like the peak of samsara in the pure forms or the spheres without form, the rupa loka, arupa loka. And yeah, and I will read the part of the question that that there is the assertion that in the contemporary psychedelic antipsychiatry, transpersonal psychology, phenomenological and existential philosophy movement, when pointing towards some extraordinary experiences of some kind of consciousness expansion, whether it is called the peak experience by Abraham Maslow and by various other names by other authors. Especially in your works, you claim that these authors fail to have the distinction between the samsaric states, the instances of nirvana, and the state you call the kunji lungmaten, like the neither samsara nor nirvana. And yeah, the question continued in the way if you have elaborated somewhere what could be the way the therapists, for example, could use when having the connection with some genuine spiritual traditions that are able to distinguish this, but having clients in the Western psychotherapy that are not particularly interested in these teachings, and they have some regular problem. So I'm not sure if you have met or you know some more regular psychotherapists that also practice Vajrayana, Dzogchen, or any other teaching that does not fail to distinguish these states, and how these people are able to deal with their clients.
Okay, very good. So let's see, let's review the question point by point. Well, first of all, it has been asserted that the contemporary psychedelic and psychiatric transpersonal psychology, phenomenological and existential philosophy movement in pointing towards some of the extraordinary experience of some kind of consciousness expansion called peak experience by Maslow and by various other names by other authors, generally fails to have the view specific to the genuine spiritual path that the higher Vajrayana or Asiyana Sokchen have. That is, they're being able to distinguish between experience and what is beyond experience, distinguishing between the samsaric states of Kamaloka, Rupaloka, Arupaloka, the experience of void emptiness, Jilum Maten, and the instances of Nirvana. Okay, so let's take that that part has been quite in detail explained in my books. I don't think I can explain further than I have already done. Perhaps I should mention that there is a book which is more recent, and I made more specifications. For example, Kunshilung Maten technically pertains to samsara, but samsara is not active in it. And what does this mean, that samsara is not active? That samsara is not active means that none of these three realms of samsara is functional, is working. And so we are like in a limbo, which is not nirvana, and is samsara because there is one type of avidya, and whatever is conditioned by one type of avidya, it pertains to samsara. But none of these three realms of samsara is active, for we are nowhere. And from that, any of the two can arise, yeah, either nirvana or samsara. In the case of the Buddha, he was in that state before enlightenment. And enlightenment are also that state. But as Rinpoche told me in 1977 in Nepal, the Buddha was in Kunji before enlightenment. He said, in Sogchen, we don't become enlightened through Kunji. And then I said, okay, but in the case of the historical Buddha, was he in Kunji? And then he said, yes. So this is not the traditional way. Well, maybe with some methods of introduction, for example, with the head, might be a type of Kunji. And then from that head was somehow the well-known Rinpoche force, and if you recognize it, then Nirvana has arisen. But most of methods of Sogchen don't involve, in Nirvana does not arise from Kunji, but arises rather directly from samsara. I mean, maybe there is an extremely short instant of Kunji, but not. It's not that we are in Kunji and from Kunji and Nirvana arise. The other explanation about the Kama Loka, Rupa Loka, Rupa Loka, all that is explained in the books. I have a more recent book, which is now with Blue Dolphin Publications in California, a three-volume book which is called The Transpersonal and Metatranspersonal Theory. And in that book, I have made all the aspects that have to do with psychology more precise. But I don't think we have time to get into that. Also, my battery is now on 71% because I cannot connect here. So I think we have to move a little faster. So yeah. I think the most important thing here, you say, for such a distinction, it's rarely possible without getting in contact with the particular teachings that employ the genuine methods for distinguishing these, and that traditionally require contact with the master to receive the initiation, empowerment, and proper instruction. Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Therefore, it is difficult to imagine a conventional Western psychotherapeutic session dealing with these extraordinary states, so that this absolutization of certain samsaric experience doesn't happen. Yes, I don't envisage this. I am not proposing that, for example, a transpersonal psychology should induce those experiences. I think for dealing with those experiences, that has to be done in the context of transmission and of a serious tradition like Sogchen. I don't envisage this being done in the context of psychotherapy. What I envisage is psychotherapy being able to help people who somehow get lost and somehow go mad or have some psychotomimetic experience after having applied Sogchen methods. And such as Russian and 17 and whatever, very intense and perhaps in the wrong way. And for that, we have some precedents in the West. There is these people now have something called whippers. They were originally with Choyan Trungpa Rinpoche, Trungpa Rinpoche. He founded a place called Maitri, Love in Sanskrit. And in that place, they used to put people who went mad, so to say, or had psychotomimetic experiences in the context of Vajrayana or Sokchen practice. And they made this place in a particular way. They divided the place according to the five Buddha families. And the disorder, whichever disorder had to respond to what the Buddha families. And they treated it according to the principles of the corresponding Buddha family. After the death of Trungpa Rinpoche, if people have contact with Champion Orgu, and there is paper by then would appear in the one issue of the mirror, I certainly can give you the sign wind horse. Blowing and hoppers animal, wind horse or two. If you put that in the mirror website, you will probably find which mirror is it that has this paper, this particular paper by the okay, afterward I have elaborated this topic somewhere in detail, not just analyzing the flows and the theories of the personal movement, also in particular Ken Wilber and Stan Gross. I have not written anything. I had myself, I ran two places in India, one in India and one in Nepal, in the mid-70s, where we used to host people who had unwillingly fallen into madness, and we somehow did it in a very open way, like we had no psychotherapist method particularly, but it was a matter of just reacting to each person in a spontaneous way, with openness, with compassion in the sense of feeling with, and from somehow some kind of a center where you would not yourself be affected by the anguishes and weird reactions that other people could have. The only place where I have somehow developed this was very recently this year, in October. I was in Santander, north of Spain, in Cantabria, invited by some course for psychiatrists in the organized by the University of Deusto, and in collaboration with other institutions of psychiatry in Spain. And it was a quite traditional kind of course. They used all the, I was supposed to use all the categories that I don't accept myself for the different kinds of mental analysis or so-called mental illnesses.
Yeah.
And the idea was to frame therapists with mindfulness so that they would know how to react to people and how to avoid projections and so on. And that was a very intensive course. I think it was 3 days, from very early in the morning till late in the evening. And the idea was to develop relative presence, that is Tepa in Tibetan, or we could say a presence of awareness to be more
Yeah, this was very good question, and I'm glad for hearing that the therapies related to cultivating the mindfulness are getting more and more diffused, because these are also going to be very popular here in the Czech Republic, where I studied psychology for the 6th year at university, and where we have some teachers that actually spent some months being monks in the Theravada tradition in Sri Lanka or like that, and then they are having also courses for the students relating to the development of mindfulness to be able to act spontaneously well in contact with the client in the therapy and so on.
Good. Then any of the other person might have a question?
Yeah.
No thanks.
No thanks.
Okay. Then we can go to question number 4. So you read it or resume it or somehow abridge it a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So the 4th question was related to the Heraclitus fragments, because I heard some critique of giving interpretation of Heraclitus in comparison with modern authors, when we have large works, that it is more easy to find there some inconsistency, but when having only some fragments like the Heraclitus, then it's more easy, or, well, some say that it is more easy to interpret it in any way we want. So that was just like a comment. So I was also wondering, how have you decided to use Heraclitus so extensively to address his thought being in accord with the genuine traditions of Dzogchen and so on?
Perhaps there are a couple of fragments of Heraclitus that we are not so easy to interpret, but most of them are quite in harmony with the Buddhist, and in particular the Dzogchen teaching. So I found it useful because they are, Heraclitus is a Western philosopher who is, well, I was going to say that he is respected, but that depends on whom, because he was very much disrespected by, I divide Greek philosophy into two main traditions, which are the Dionysians and the Orphics. Probably, I don't think that this is in any of the books that you have read, but I will develop it in a book which is called Greek Philosophy in the East. And but now we have one of the appendices to the book that is supposedly being published by Blue Dolphin Publication that I mentioned before. There is one appendix there which is on these two traditions and how I connect all the Greek philosophers into these two lines of transmission. And of course, it's largely a speculation, and I say there, I acknowledge it, and there is nothing to be proved, but also it seems so consistent. And there are all these lines that use the method of Isosthenia, and for me, that is a tradition coming from Heraclitus. And there are all of those philosophers who, on the other hand, are dualistic, and they separate mind, soul, and body, and they think the body is bad, and the body is the tombstone of the soul, or the jail of the soul, and so on. And I somehow draw this and explain a little bit of genesis of these different systems. It's all very hypothetical, but we can do it because none of the fragments of Heraclitus really contradicts that. And if he were a representative of the Dionysian tradition, and that Dionysian tradition came from Shaivism, and Shaivism came from Mount Kailash, from the Bön tradition of Dzogchen, then that would certainly make sense, yeah. However, in the case of, for example, all of these works that I criticized by Ken Wilber, by Stan Grof, by Washburn, who is the one of the author that I criticized the least, perhaps, he's very hypothetical, because supposing that their works would be lost, how could we know which fragments would remain? But it would seem very unlikely that only fragments that would be compatible with the Dzogchen teaching would remain, because so much of their work is incompatible with it. Nearly all of it I find to be incompatible with the Dzogchen teaching. So my impression is that, my feeling is that it would be very unlikely that we would get fragments from these people if their work were lost, that would be all of them somehow consistent with the Dzogchen teaching. I don't know if that responds your question.
Yeah, I believe so, because it was quite recently when I discovered that You have published improved version of the Beyond Mind part of the trilogy, where you have added also the addendum with the Wilbur 5, like the newer works published in the last decade, where you have also mentioned that even of some development and publishing new books, the basic errors didn't get corrected at all, yet introducing new ones and still using some weird developmental view, using terms in a totally different way than is the traditional one, and so on. Yeah, I think that's quite clear.
Okay, yeah. Anyone else might have a question?
Yeah.
No, thanks. You think no? Okay, we go on, we move to question 5.
Yeah, I just have a look if what is... Yeah, I feel that the fifth question is almost is very similar to the one that we have already discussed. It was the thing related with the psychotherapy, because here it is about the postmodern approaches that according to your analysis are not radical enough in deconstructing some suppositions that they still keep, like those of the immanence of the progress and advancement of the culture and technology. So the question was how to advance the postmodern approach in the social sciences taught at universities, so more people could overcome the typical limitations. My reply is to introduce the philosophy of Madhyamaka, of the Buddhist philosophy, to the Western academy, because according to the comparisons, it seems that it is the truly postmodern approach, when the deconstruction of some substances is done thoroughly.
Yeah, that is what was said in volume 3 of that trilogy. When we discussed Derrida, actually, in that particular point, I drew from David Loy, who is a Zen teacher, and he wrote a book about Derrida, and uh-huh. He is him who mentioned that Derrida deconstructs identity but doesn't deconstruct difference, and Madhyamaka deconstructs both of them. So it's actually infinitely more, it's the only one that takes really sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned here the approach of Harleen Anderson.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't, I can begin to reply here. Okay. You say here the approach considers an experience and or described by the client as fully legitimate, with the therapist having no right to judge it, to recommend something, etc. For the therapist, according to the not knowing stance, cannot directly and accurately know what should be good for the client. However, it seems that it's quite lacking any vision direction of either the aim, intention, where to actually go in such a therapy, or to any consideration about is the nature or some true character of the experiences of the client. So the cluster of approaches, like the ones in quite descending, for not rejecting some types of experiences and preferring certain others, but still it seems to me as not satisfactory enough, for it embraces anything as natural and legitimate, but not giving any plausible view and a key like the one Buddhist view posits, that is, the consideration of the experiences and their multitude of cognitive contents as being delusorily valued because of the avidya. Yeah, here it's very difficult for. I mean, I am quite for an approach like that that doesn't give a direction to the person, because otherwise it's like the psychotherapist is assuming a position of one who can direct, and I don't think maybe that could be the position of a traditional master of a discipline such as Vajrayana or Dzogchen. But even in Dzogchen, the principle is responsibility. It does not have responsibility. For example, in No Cave, Rinpoche has told me, you have to do something. You have to do this or you have to do that. And my previous teacher never told me anything like that either. So my experience is that in my whole life, no spiritual teacher told me, you have to do this or you have to do that. Or think, well, things are like this or like that. Yes, in the teachers they say, things are like this or things are like that. The therapist is not the teacher. To say things are like this or things are like that. That would have to be an altogether different kind of therapy that people would approach knowing that you are going to teach them Buddhism or something like that, or Dzogchen or whatever. And so in the context of this, maybe there could be a way to actually convey something that has to do with the Dzogchen teachings and with Buddhism. And perhaps I could illustrate it with a couple of examples from tradition. And I mean, to illustrate this Harleen Anderson approach. Yep. One of them comes from Zen. It's the case of a man who was being disturbed by a ghost. And then he went to a Zen master because he was driven crazy by this ghost. He perceived all kinds of extrasensorial phenomena and weird things, and he was haunted by this ghost, and he couldn't take it anymore. So he went to the master, and then the master gave him a box, and he told him, listen, there is something in this box. You should not open the box until you have applied my instruction to the ghost. What you are going to do is you are going to go to the ghost, and when the ghost asks, you are going to ask him what is inside his box. If the ghost is supposed to have supernatural powers, extrasensory perception and so on, he should know what is inside. So you go to the ghost and you ask, and then according to what he tells you, you open the box and check whether that is to the place, and he goes up here, and then he asks him what was inside the box, and the ghost could not reply, and then the ghost didn't appear anymore. That is one of the examples. The other example is that of a practitioner of church who was being threatened by a very awful, terrible demon. And this demon became all the more wrathful and bigger every day, and he would not dissolve it. He would apply the instruction he had got from his teacher, and he had no way to dissolve this appearance. So he went to his teacher in despair, and the teacher gave him a very sharp purbu knife, and told him, the demon comes next time, you charcoal, and then you write a cross with this charcoal on the belly, and then you stick the purbu right into the belly. But beware, and then very wide-eyed and with very much intensity, he said, but beware, just before you stick the dagger, check very well where you're going to stick the dagger. And then he did as advised, and he was going to stick the dagger after wrapping the cross, and then he remembered the master's recommendation. When he looked, and the cross had been thrown soundly. Had he stopped the knife, he had killed himself. appeared inside that agony. An introduction, the realization of Rigveda, manifestation of Rigveda. So those ways whereby one can somehow with some direction to the therapy, to the but somehow give him input so that he or she has some kind of experience or even realization that was in the right direction. That is enough as a reply.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Just try to maybe speak a little bit more louder or more close to the microphone. I'm not sure whether the Skype terminates it, but now I heard very, very badly. I'm not sure if Milan or Itka had the same issue.
I hear it very good because I know this story that I have some problems with listening, but I understand what Kapila said.
Yeah, this was the same for me. Yeah, I knew the story, so I could fill in the gaps, but for those that would like to listen to the recording but don't know the stories, I'm afraid they will not be able to recapture what has been said. So
if you like, I can repeat the part of the ghost, if that was the part that wasn't heard. Is the lady also agree? Does the lady also agree that that is the part that was not heard?
If it is written in some of the books, it could be read later. Or yeah, you can just repeat it, but maybe try to speak a little bit more louder so the Skype does not terminate the speech.
Well, the ghost story, I am not sure if it is in one of my books. This man was haunted by a ghost. And he went to a Zen master and told him his problem. Yeah, and the Zen master gave him a box and said, "You should not open this box until you confront the ghost and ask him what is inside the box." Then he went to the ghost and asked him what was inside the box, and the ghost could not reply. And then after that, the ghost disappeared and never disturbed him again. The other story is the story of the practitioner of the church, but that one is in my books. So probably everyone knows it. I would like to know whether the other one you know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So yeah, this and perfect. Now it was much better, the reception and the quality of the sound. So yeah, like that it will be better.
Okay.
So thank you very much, and yeah, we are heading towards the end. The question, I just have a look. The sixth question is the. I found it in one footnote in the Beyond History part about the law of inverted effect. Inverse law, reverse law of Alan Watts. Very often I experience the standard narrative or reply of those that are proponents of the ideology of progress. That the reply is like, should we go back to the trees when mentioning any sort of a critique of this way of thinking? When I had some courses about sustainability, there was a concept of a demographic transition when it is being said that Well, just I would make it shorter, that the problem can be solved by educating people in the world and by raising the gross domestic product, because according to the statistics, there is a clear evidence that the population diminishes, and when the population starts not increasing so much, then the problem of all the major problem of the ecological crisis and so on is more or less solved, because less people consume less resources and so on and so on. And implicitly said, we can just continue the way we are doing things, because if we are not so many in the world, then there are enough resources for us, and so on. The question is regarding to what is your experience in Latin America, where many problems that do not seem so evident in Europe yet are much more evident, I believe, particularly the experiments with the GMO, the genetic plants, the soybeans that are being imported back to Europe, and so on and so on.
Yes. Well, to the first part of the question, for example, this idea of raising the gross national product, if with the gross national product that we have nowadays, the world cannot, I mean, if reach the verge of, our species, humankind, has reached the verge of extinction, if we have to further raise the gross national product in all so-called developing countries, which it's a paradoxical term that I don't agree with, that would mean that consumption would be much greater, and that would merely accelerate the process of self-destruction of our species. So, for me, the only thing that can be envisaged is the ungrowth, quite the opposite, yeah, is to reduce resources. Of course, the idea is that if people have a higher national, gross national product, automatically the birth rate drops. But now in South America, I think the present world situation, what we are coming, we are now really at the threshold where the terrible ecological effects of what we have done are becoming all the more visible and far all the more evident, and perhaps that would have a much bigger effect than raising the gross national product, which would be self-destructive. So perhaps that would help for all peoples in the world, with some exceptions, which are those peoples which are religiously conditioned against that, such as, for example, the Muslim countries, where, for example, Sufis don't have much of a leverage. Those are people who, I don't know what could happen for these people to what could induce these people to change and reduce birth rate and so on. But according to the predictions in the Kala Chakra Tantra, of course, we cannot speak of predictions in an academic environment, but the Kala Chakra Wars would take place precisely in those countries. And but this is just, as I said, we cannot bring that out in an academic environment. But then there is your question about South America. And, for example, in Venezuela, GMOs are prohibited. That was one, you see, every government has good and bad things. there are many scenes of the Chavez government that I don't like at all, but that was a very good scene that it did to absolutely prohibit the use of GMOs. However, the country, rather than developing agriculture more and more so as to become self-sufficient, has become ever more dependent on other countries, and because of political reasons, for example in Venezuela, it's in the interest of the Chavez government to have good relationship with Argentina and Brazil and so on. So most of the agricultural products that are being imported into Venezuela are GMOs. So it's prohibited to grow GMOs in Venezuela, but it's permitted to import all GMOs and possibly even clone meat from Argentina, which is being prohibited in the European Union. We don't know. At any rate, in Tashigar North, we have some experiments with permaculture that you mentioned here, this term. And you say, I feel some of the interpretation present in the permaculture movement could be used for that purpose. I really don't know much about permaculture because I haven't been able to go to any of these courses. And time is limited. I write a lot. And I still have a lot to write, and human life is limited. I mean, we die, and I want to finish my work, so I don't have time to make research into everything that arises. I know that permaculture is an interesting concept and an interesting project, but I don't know much about it actually. So in that particular point, I don't think it will be very helpful.
Yeah, thank you very much for these replies. It was new information for me that what is the actual situation in Venezuela, because I knew more about the situation in Argentina or Brazil, so I had the outgroup homogeneity bias, considering whole Latin America as one big continent.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Any questions, Jitka, Milan?
No. Thank you very much for your question. It was very, very good answer, and I don't have any question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, yeah,
I also thank you very much, but I am not a philosopher, so it was quite difficult for me, but I think that Martin, my son, he will tell me more during Christmas, and he will explain me a lot of things.
Okay, very good. We still have one more question, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe more, I think one more.
Yeah, there is one more that I sent you. I hope the battery will survive it.
Yeah, we are on 51%, so I think we can for sure make it.
So that's fine. Okay, so the last question was related to the lying's spiral of pretenses and of the phenomenological negation, pointing out the major distinction between the logical negation, whereby negating the negation we are returning to the basic condition, while in the phenomenological negation, where we are dependent on the flow of time, so then the negation of one negation does not bring us to the very same condition as the original one, but rather, as is the diagram illustrates, that these points seem to be very near, but still they are so far away. And if I understood it correctly, the whole cycle of samsara is like permanently doing this cycle of negations. Yeah. But in contrast to...
Sorry, I have to interrupt you because there was an interruption. And I couldn't hear some part. Could you go back about 2 minutes and begin again? From 2 minutes back?
Yes, okay. I just tried to say to Milan and Jitka, who may not have been accustomed to the concept of the spiral of pretenses of run-on playing. Yeah?
Yes?
And the difference between the logical negation, where by doing a double negation we are getting back to the original condition, and and for the phenomenological negation, we cannot get by negating twice to the original one, but in fact we are just pretending, we are back, but we are more and more further away. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I read the difference between the Hegelian way of the, like, the thesis and antithesis and the synthesis, where it was claimed being some improvement of the original condition, while from the standpoint of the degenerative perspective, any of these negations are just causing the higher degree of pretense, and therefore of the delusion, and bringing us more into the Kali Yuga experience.
Exactly, yes. I must tell you that the connection is not so good now. Very often it would be interrupted, and it would sound like that, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
But I understood all that you said, so no problem. Yeah, that is like that, yeah? That is the view that I have explained. So, it seems that we come to the last part of that question, which is about this universal mind. If you like, you can put it, or otherwise I'll just reply directly, but if you like to put it, you can do it now.
Yeah, okay, so the question then is that, I will just find the question, yeah. Yeah. There is the relic from the theosophy that all spiritual traditions have in fact the same aims and realizations, or there exists some universal mind or consciousness common to all, an interpretation that could also be drawn from the particular fragments of Heraclitus, considering the Logos as some world consciousness or so. And the question is, could you expose the structure of the errors in these views in a more elaborate and precise ways? In fact, after writing the question, I have found the article of Igor Berkin in his recent article in the International Journal of Transpersonal Studies, and it seemed it was almost perfectly in accord with your works, of course, when he is also the Santi Mahasangha teacher. So I'm not sure what is the question actually in here because.
Well, maybe we can reply to what is written here. You say it seems that in this system there are multiple errors and distortions occurring simultaneously, one of them being the one just described, yeah, which is that either I'm going back to a condition like that of the child. We would be somehow nearer our true condition, but I think that is already explained quite in detail in the book, in the different books I have written, so I don't think that needs really. And the other one is the different unauthentic experience that can arise through transpersonal system. I think that has already been explained quite in detail. So I think that the only thing that would remain would be replying about Igor Berkin's article. And all that has to do with that. And you say here, let me see. Okay, combined perhaps with the erroneous view profit perhaps from the theosophy that all spiritual traditions have in fact the same aims and realization? This is for certainly not true, yeah? I mean, it's true that theosophy claimed that, but it's not true that theosophy was right, which is exactly what you are saying, because they don't have the same aims and realization, and that there exists some universal mind or consciousness common to all. And then here, I look into the paper today because I have that paper since Igor sent it to the International Journal of Transpersonal Studies, but I read it at that time and I had forgotten what it said. But now I read a little bit this afternoon before coming here, and he explains something about the Alaya Vijnana and so on. However, there is one point where, for example, there seems to be a discrepancy between, because I made reference to the logos as being universal, and then Igor is saying that the Alaya Vijnana is not universal but personal. There is one thing that is, I don't want to get into an argument with Santi Mahasangha teacher because we could get into, for example, the different Vijnana positions in the different traditions such as Yogacara and Mariamaka Swatantrika Yogacara and Mariamaka Shentongpa and the Dzogchen teachings and so on. This would be absolutely complex. But there is one thing in general, it is said that there is only one Dharmakaya. There are many Nirmanakaya, but there is only one Dharmakaya. In the Dharmakaya, there are no differences. We cannot speak of different consciousnesses in the Dharmakaya. Actually, Dharmakaya is not a consciousness, which implies duality, but a non-dual awareness. And, for example, if you take the all-creating thing, this tantra of the Dzogchen Tsende, is always saying that all there is only Kunje Gyalpo, and that there is absolutely nothing except for that. And that this is just pure non-dual awareness, this is Kunje Gyalpo, and that there are not different sources of dual, non-dual pure awareness. So in that sense, I think probably Igor would agree with that, and it's better that we focus on that where we can identify that on some details where we can create useless differences which are not really important for the development of the Dzogchen teachings and of people who are practicing the Dzogchen teaching, or for that matter, for conveying a message to humankind so as to somehow try to capitalize the transition that has to occur if our species is going to survive. So the point is this. In this sense, we can speak of a common awareness. And I believe that this is exactly what Heraclitus was saying. Heraclitus was saying that the all-created thing creates all thoughts. And we, who are deluded beings, believe to be the creators of our own thoughts. So I would rather focus on that part than on all the details of the different interpretations of the Alaya Vijnana. I don't know if you think that replies to the question.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that I understood it correctly, that you have made an objection to the way how Igor Berkin explained the term of Dharma Kaya, for he was claiming it like being an individual consciousness, while you objected it that it should be rendered more like the the non-dual awareness beyond the individual.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because but still, still the explanation is much more clear than when totally mismatching the trikaya in the works of Ken Wilber, when it means something completely different, neither compatible with the Dzogchen nor with the Vajrayana approach.
I am not saying that there is something wrong in what Igor says about the Dharmakaya. I am not saying this. Actually, let me open the paper so that I can read what he says about the Dharmakaya, so that I can reply properly. But at any rate, let's see what he says. Although Dharmakaya is explained as an enlightened mind, which is the same for all Buddhas, exactly, so we are agreeing here, sameness here means that its potential qualifications are equal for all Buddhas. It does not mean, so there is some difference between what he's saying and what I was saying. Still, I think this difference is a difference with mainly that has to do with language, because when we speak about Dharmakaya, it seems that we're speaking about something objectifiable, and it has nothing to do with that. Dharmakaya is a realization that each person can have, and to speculate about the Dharmakaya, whether it is the same or different for every person, it's a little bit beyond the point, because the important thing is to have this realization, Dharmakaya, which is absolute sameness. And as it is realized, for example, in the practice of texture. And of course, there are different explanations of the Trikaya. The explanation in the Dzogchen Upadesha is not the same as in other lower teachings, because, for example, when Rinpoche explains in the tantric sense the Trikayas, he explains that the Dharmakaya is like the thick lane, the center of the Vajra, and then the upper side of the Vajra is the Sambhogakaya, which is pure vision, the pure five elements and the pure five wisdom, and that the five points below are the Nirmanakaya, which are in pure vision and the material elements. But in Dzogchen, we don't make a difference between pure vision and impure vision. All falls into the Dharmakaya, and where pure vision or impure vision, it liberates itself spontaneously, and that is pure realization of Dharmakaya. Then, in the practice of Tugel, we can make Rolpa energy so then we go back to the Dharmakaya. The Dharmakaya is the realization of the true condition of Tang energy, which is the energy which all thoughts are made. All experiences are made. You don't have this explanation in the explanations of the Dharmakaya of other traditions, which are not Dzogchen, of lower teaching, lower vehicle. If there is a mode of manifestation of energy which is Dang, it would be a little weird to think that there is a different Dang energy for everyone. So each individual would have the realization of the true condition of Dang energy, and that would be Dharmakaya. And Dang energy is the same. Of course, in each individual, the realization of Dang energy would occur only for that individual. So in that sense, you can say it's different. But you see what I mean? We are on the limit of what words can reach.
Yeah. And sure, that is the limit of the. Then there comes the symbolic transmission that tries to overcome it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Then at any rate, then after the realization of the Dharmakaya, then in Sochen, Upadesha, then we practice Togel, where role-play energy manifests. Then the Dharmakaya is the realization of the true condition of role-play energy. And of course, that is pure vision in the true sense of the term, but it has nothing to do with what happens in tantric visualization. Because in tantric visualization, we visualize with Dan energy. We visualize by imagining. It's not that the deity manifests absolutely bright and luminous before us, or that we see ourselves like that spontaneously, but that we imagine with Dan energy the form of the deity. And that is different from what happens in Togel, where the deity manifests even more brightly than our perception of the physical world. And the realization of the Sambhogakaya then is the realization of the true condition of that. That means when the perceiver, himself as separated from the vision, dissolves by the dynamic, it's a little bit complex, the dynamic that the Sokchen teaches called tinedrako, or spontaneous wrathful activity of the Sambhogakaya, of Rolpa energy. And that was the realization of the Sambhogakaya. And then the realization of the Nirmanakaya would be when, by repetition of this realization of non-duality between visions and perceiver, where the perceiver dissolves all the time that it appears, when there is no longer someone that feels to be separate from the physical world, and that would be like the condition of germe, which means non-duality. This is non-duality in a sense which is very different from, for example, the germe-ta of germe-ta of lungs, of longe. It's a totally different type of non-duality. Here it means that there is no subject-object distinction. And when that happens, the Rolpa energy and the cell energy overlap, and hence the wisdoms of quality and quantity of the Sambhogakaya manifest on the Nirmanakaya level. That is something that doesn't happen in any other tradition, only with the Sokchen teaching, and only with those teachings of Togel. So, so back to our point, Dan energy is only one Dan energy. Rolpa energy is only one Rolpa energy. And cell energy is only one Rolpa energy. But there are many Nirmanakayas, and in each Nirmanakaya, the realization of the Dharmakaya is only for that Nirmanakaya, not for the other Nirmanakaya, but it's always the realization of the same Dan energy, which is the true condition of all thoughts and of all mental experiences. So I think with that, we somehow can have clarified this, yeah? And it's very clear in the Kunje Gyalpo that there is only this principle, and all that manifests and all sentient beings are emanation of this single principle. And this single principle is Rigpa, and we could say that it is the Dharmakaya. So I think with that it's more or less clear, yeah?
Yeah, thank you very much for that.
So, do you think that we have finished? Because here there is a man who will begin to play music in a few minutes.
Yeah,
he's already switching on the amplifier.
Yeah, for me that was exhausting. I just want to leave some last space for Jitka or Milan if they have anything related to that.
No, I don't have anything, any questions, but thank you, Elias, for your information and for your time. It was brilliant. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. It's my pleasure to be able to help. If one writes books, it's because one wants to clarify things, and this is part of the process, because not the written word is never the same. I mean, you can never, only in dialogue, you can really clarify details. And also like the spoken word somehow very often reaches more and more to the core of the scenes, yeah?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much too. I'm glad that we could have arranged this, and that's it. I am quite fulfilled now for that, and I just wanted to thank you very much also for the for publishing at least the first part of the Source of Dangerous Fear, the loops, like the first part. Not giving the Upadesha instructions, but even though for me having received the direct introduction from Chögyal Namgyal Norbu, the first part is really excellent source of everyday inspiration. Yeah, I read it very often because it really clarifies a lot of things and. Allows me to see through the patterns and the cyclic pretensions that really tend to dissolve and diminish by just reading about that.
Well, thanks a lot for your comment, and so it seems to me that we are done.
I would like to tell you thank you very much, but I am the beginner of all these things. Maybe I should read your books first, and then I can communicate and I can ask questions.
Okay, very good.
So yeah, so enjoy the stay at Tenerife. I hope there is quite a warm weather in contrast to the Czech Republic.
Yes, I imagine that you are probably at least 1 meter of snow in the Czech Republic.
Well, now there the snow is disappearing, but until last week there was some, yeah.
Okay. Anyhow, probably very cold, maybe even colder than with the snow, because the snow makes it drier.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so let's finish it for today, and you enjoy the music that is going to be played there if you are participating, and thank you, It Kind Milan, for taking part, and that's it.
Well, you are very welcome, and okay, so if there are further questions later on, we will communicate, and it will be easier because here. The conditions were not very, were not perfect. There were people talking, there were other people doing Skype at the same time at some moments. It was a little bit, sometimes I couldn't hear, and sometimes I got distracted, but at least we managed to do something. So, I say goodbye, and have a very good time, and we'll continue in touch. Bye bye.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Thank you and goodbye.